This is a Storage Switzerland podcast.
Time for some news and insights from the world of storage. I'm Charlie Hodges, along with George Crump, the lead analyst and founder of Storage Switzerland. George, a few stories to hit on and then a couple controversial things. So you ready to start?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay, StarTech's 4-bay Thunderbolt RAID enclosure. We've already used Akito's 2-bay enclosure. What about StarTech's 4-bay?
Well, there's a couple things here. Number one, obviously there's 4 bays, so you, in theory, have twice as much capacity. And it also takes 3.5-inch drives. The test that we ran was with standard 2-terabyte SATA drives, basically configured for capacity type of storage. Worked fine. You do have to mount the drive brackets and things like that. That's a one-time problem, more or less. I think that's all good. I'm hoping to be able to test it with 4 SSD drives to see how it does for performance, because it does have a Thunderbolt 2 port on it, so you would think that the performance would be quite good. I did use it as my boot drive for a while, and other than the fact that I could hear the hard drive spinning, it was performance was fine. Wasn't as fast as my SSD, but you would kind of expect that.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it was good unit. And, it's very cost effective. It's a good way to get a fair amount of capacity real cheap.
And when you're talking about the drives that you used, what size drives did you put in that unit?
2 terabyte. I think they were Hitachi drives.
Okay, and if you were to go with a SSD, could it hold up to some of the bigger SSD drives that are available?
Yeah, because it's taken the 3.5-inch form factor drives. It should take, I think there's like something in the 900 gig range on the market today. So if you really wanted to get a high capacity SSD configuration, in theory, you should be able to get close to 4 terabytes in the box.
That's amazing when it comes to SSD, and it should have no problem working with video. You could even put your files on that machine and do video work with that, I assume, huh?
Oh, yeah. Sure, absolutely.
Okay. XIO is entering March like a lion, but there's no lamb in sight. What do you mean by that?
I guess I was feeling particularly creative with the title that day. So this week...
Of course, that's the title of a briefing note that you can find on StorageSwiss.com.
Yeah, I think pretty much search for lion or lamb. It's probably the only time we've ever used either one of those in a title. But anyways, so XIO has been around for a while, actually. Before they became XIO, in fact, they were a company called Xiotech. As they made this change, they came out with this function, if you will, called intelligent storage element. And essentially, it was an incredibly smart disk array that was designed specifically to provide very, very good long-term reliability. In fact, back then, they were giving a 5-year warranty, which at the time was, if not unheard of, certainly a rarity. They became XIO as they started to implement SSD into the solutions. And that they put, again, some very intelligent real-time disk to SSD tiering capabilities, which actually worked quite well as well. And so that's when they made the company name change and have really focused on that. The history, if you will, on XIO is a bunch of ex-Seagate guys that really knew hard disk drives at a very granular level, scary granular. So the fact that they've now come out with an all-flash array is kind of a big deal. So the all-flash array is on the market now. Obviously, it doesn't have any of the tiering functionality because it's all flash, but they come to market with a box that's ranked number one in the price performance category on the SPC1 benchmark. Now, I have my issues with certain benchmarks. Frankly, the SPC1 is one of the better ones, but it certainly gives you kind of a fair look at where this thing is going to go from a performance perspective. The other important thing is that they claim to be able to provide 100% performance at 100% capacity. So a lot of systems will begin to slow down as you reach the upper end of capacity. That doesn't apply here. So again, another really good thing. At the same time, back in January, they also launched what they call their ICE 780. which had improved performance. That's a hybrid system, so you know, for people that don't need an all-flash system, this gives really good performance for flash and hard drive-based systems.
Okay, let's move to backup and Veeam. Your briefing note says for Veeam, it's about more than backup, it's about availability. Explain, please.
Yeah, this isn't so much a briefing note as it is a sort of just state of the company. There's really not a lot of new we talk about here, but it's interesting to see how Veeam right now, in my opinion, is if not the most successful backup companies on the market. They're got to be one of the most successful. They're the ones that all the legacy vendors want to attack. They're the ones that all the new startup backup guys want to become. And so they're carving out market share left and right. The other thing I'll tell you is that when I talk to a Veeam customer, I can't think of a time where I've talked to an unhappy one. I mean, they generally create fans, not customers. So it's a lot to be said there. The focus of the piece here is Veeam's focus over the past 6 to 8 months has really been on availability instead of just backing stuff up. So making sure that when something does go wrong, you can get your application, not only get your application back up and running, but do so in a very quick and timely fashion. And so they have replication that allows you to do that, with very low RTO, RPO type of capabilities. And then they also have recovery in place from their backup product, which gives you about 15 to 30 minute type of recovery. So for anybody in that 5 minute to 30 minute range, Veeam has a really good message.
Let's go to Exablox, and they're getting a lot of money from Dell. Not an acquisition, but just an investment, just putting money into it. Why is Dell putting so much cash into Exablox?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I mean, first let's talk about what Exablox is. Exablox is an object-based storage system, but they don't make a big deal about that because they've taken object storage and made it suitable for consumption at the mid-market, so tier two data center, so to speak. So they kind of hide the fact that they're object, but take advantage of what object can do. So that gives them really good scaling. It gives them the ability to respond to hard drive failures very quickly. So there's a lot of good things there. And they're also very cost effective. What's interesting is they essentially sell the storage system without hard drives, and then you add your own hard drives to it. So that means you can go down to, depends on what part of the country you're in, but Fry's or Best Buy or whomever, and buy hard drives right off the shelf and plug it into the system, and they tend to work fine. What's amazing is that about 90% of their customers actually choose that. Exablox does sell systems with drives already in it, but about 90% of them choose to go the empty box route and just add their own drives later. So that's the technology. Now, as to why Dell is investing, that's kind of an interesting thing. So Dell Ventures was set up a while ago, and Dell is investing money in startups and that they seem interesting. I think there's two purposes there. One is to kind of keep their finger on the pulse of where storage is going. EMC does this also. I think some of the other vendors do. And there's probably potential for some sort of acquisition in the future, but not necessarily guaranteed. But it is interesting that Dell has made an investment, and not a small one.
The thing about Dell, remember a few years ago, they were buying up a lot of companies, and it doesn't seem like they're doing a lot of acquisition like they were before. It's now more, okay, let's partner with and invest in. Seems like a change of business strategy for the Round Rock-based company.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think what they're trying to do is figure out what the next play is going to be. I mean, if you look at Dell's current portfolio, they've got a pretty rich set of storage products available to them. They don't really have anything that, say, an Exablox would do. They also don't really have an object storage-based system, not a kind of a more traditional object storage system. They don't have that today. So I think they're kind of, maybe you could say, placing bets and seeing which one pays off the best, and then maybe that's the one they acquire. These venture funds, because Intel has a big venture fund, as you know, as well. Mm-hmm. And so they're, I think a lot of times they're just investing to see where these guys are going, because obviously when you give a company $16 million, you sort of get a seat at the table. Because in the case of Exablox, we're talking You know, they've raised a total of $38 million, so $16 million is almost half of what they've raised so far. So I'm assuming Dell has, you know, at least a seat at the table, like I said. I think that gives Dell some access to what's going on in the industry and maybe allows them to make smarter purchases going forward.
But Dell continues to want to get into storage. A major part of Dell world this past December was storage in the back part of the meeting hall. Yes, it was the back part of the meeting hall, but a good bit of that was dedicated strictly to storage.
Yeah, I think that I think that'll continue. You know, Dell's a company that I happen to like, and I think that they're doing a lot of good things here. It's just really, what do they do? I Dell and HP in particular, I guess IBM to a lesser extent, are really an interesting positions because they sell both servers and storage. And as we start to converge these infrastructures and we go to software-defined storage and things like that, it gives them some interesting options as how they go to market. Like another thing that we just heard recently from Dell, I haven't written this up yet, but their relationship that they have with Nutanix is doing very, very well. That's a converged infrastructure solution. You can search on our site for Nutanix and find stuff on it. But they're doing really well with that as well. So Dell's doing a lot of good stuff right now. It'll be interesting to see how they evolve this. Them and HP, and to a lesser extent IBM, they're kind of in a nice position because whether the whole world goes converged or whether the world wants to stick with traditional storage, they can play either side of that coin.
One thing that we know is that the world of storage is changing, and a lot of it is going to the cloud. It may be part of the reason why Dell and some of these other companies are sort of feeling things out to see where they're going, because will people continue to buy massive storage units for in-house when they can now easily get it up to the cloud? But the question is cloud storage risky for users? Your thoughts about the risk of going to primarily cloud storage?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Our friends over at thestoragenewsletter.com, we can put a link to this article in the show notes, had an interesting titled article anyways that said, is cloud storage risky for users? And they did kind of a nice little quick summary of the benefits and the potential downsides, and also some of the failures that we've seen in the cloud. And I think they actually had a good point that while there have been failures, you know, companies that have had a cloud solution that failed for one reason or another, there was only about a dozen of those that have failed. And you know, compare that to any other industry, that's actually not that bad. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I think the challenge that we see today with the cloud is really going to end up coming down to cost. I think we can get the cloud secure enough. I think we can get the cloud fast enough because, you know, the quality of the internet connection continues to increase. The question really is, can you hit the cost point? You know, because yes, the price per gigabyte, when you look at it on a monthly basis, looks very appealing. But, you know, what I'm constantly telling people to do is do the math. So multiply that out by at least 12. Multiply it out by 60 so you get a five-year look at what the cost of this is going to be. If you start multiplying it out by 10 years or 15 years, that cloud storage gets very expensive. You know, Charlie, as you know, before starting Storage Switzerland, I was a CTO at a large storage integrator, mm-hmm. and eventually actually became president of that company. We had about 150 people. And we were a big Salesforce.com user. Well, when we started with Salesforce.com, I actually brought it into the company. It was a few months after Salesforce.com had started. Well, back then, they were giving it away literally for free for the first, I think it was 5 or 25 seats, and then you paid from there. Well, in that short period of time, from the time I was just a technical guy to basically running the company, the pricing model had changed, and now I had 150 people using it. And I looked at the quarterly cost, and we were paying almost $150,000 a quarter.
Wow.
To use the service, right? So it went from free to $150,000 a quarter. That becomes a pretty big investment. I mean, that's $600,000 a year. You can go buy a very good CRM solution for $600,000. Now, yes, you have to get it to work and maintain it and all those other things that Salesforce.com would be quick to remind me of. But the same, all of that, the reason I tell that story is the same holds true with any kind of cloud storage service, right? Over time, you got to do the math on how much your capacity you're using today is going to cost month after month, year after year. And then you also, of course, have to assume that that capacity is going to grow over time, right? And I think that that really becomes the big issue. So I don't worry about cloud providers shutting down and going away. I mean, in our world, the biggest example of that was Nervonix, who was founded in 2007, closed their doors in 6 years. They closed in 2013. We were involved in helping people get their data out of there, and we did it. It was a scramble. We got very short notice from Nervonix that it was happening, but we were able to do it. We were able to get all the data out. It wasn't pleasant, but probably learned a lot of lessons, and so we can do that now. The challenge is really more, and like I said before, the privacy really becomes sort of the other big issue, and I think that, you know, encryption algorithms and things like that are far enough along now that we know the right questions to ask and things like that. And so that really is more of an emotional issue. And I get the emotion behind it, by the way. So that's something we can address. It really is going to eventually just come down to price. Is can the cloud guys drive the price down cheap enough over time that it makes sense? And right now, if I do the math today, we can't get there, right? You can't, especially when you're storing, if you're, you know, a less than a terabyte user and you're using Dropbox or Microsoft Office or whatever, Google, whatever, yeah, that's fine. But if you look at it at a petabyte type of scale, which is probably what an enterprise would need, and you multiply that by at least 12 months or at least 60 for 5 years, that becomes very expensive very quickly. And you get to the point where you can start thinking, okay, I might be able to do this in-house for cheap, right? And so that, you know, it's going to be that's going to be really the real equation. In fact, I've been working on a paper on and off that really does the math on this. And every time I've done the equations, anytime I start looking at any size set of data for any period of time, and I usually use 5 years, and I don't think 5 years is, I'm not like saying, hey, keep it for 50. I think keeping a set of data for 5 years is pretty reasonable. The cloud is always more expensive than the equivalent cost to do it internally.
But if you buy equipment in-house, you only are going to keep that maybe 5 or 6 years, and then you're going to have to upgrade because of advances in technology.
True. Yeah, I mean, that's the other side of the coin. And I think that if you look at some of the object storage systems, we were just talking about this, right? But if you look at some of the object storage systems that are on the market, they kind of do what I would describe as a rolling upgrade. So as you grow through that 5 year period in an internal cloud, you keep replacing it with new nodes, right? And so over time, it gradually just upgrades itself. And so there's generally the concept of this big forklift payoff in 5 years, or not payoff, but pay up.
Right.
It doesn't really exist because you're doing that over time. So it is more than just the cost of the hard drives, no question. And that's kind of one of the challenges of doing the math on this thing. But there's a balance, right? And I think that, you know, many organizations that, again, are sub petabyte in size are going to be fine with the cloud, and the cost differential is not worth the sweat of having to manage your own storage system. As you get over a petabyte, it becomes more difficult, I think, and more attractive to do it internally. And by the way, I think that number that I just used, 1 petabyte, that will change over time as the cloud providers get more and more aggressive. You probably saw the news, I think it was today or yesterday came out, that talked about Google now offering a service similar to Amazon Glacier. Obviously, that's going to make Amazon have to respond with a more competitive price point as well. And so that'll, you know, we'll see an eroding in price points over time. So that number of that 1 petabyte in a year, we might be saying, okay, it's 5 petabytes. In a year after that, we might be saying it's 7 petabytes. So that'll go up. I'm factoring that in. But I think that you also got to remember that data growth in general will continue to go up as well.
Okay, George, what are the travel plans for the next couple of weeks?
Well, let's see. I'm actually in Fort Worth all of next week. I'm very
excited.
Yes, I'm very excited about that. Then after that, we're back on the road. I'll be in The week of the 23rd, I'm actually, this is kind of interesting, I'm actually speaking to a few high school classes in the Baltimore, Maryland area.
Cool.
On Monday, just talking about technology and where the kids should be focusing as far as you know, their careers and things like that. I guess they were out of interesting speakers, so they invited me in. And then the Monday, the 24th, I'm doing the data protection workshop with TechTarget, and that's the stuff that we're talking about, primary protected storage.
And you'll be where with data?
Oh, that'll help, huh? I'll be in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yep. So then on the 25th, wow, this is a busy week. The 25th, I'll be back in Dallas. I'll be speaking for Clear Technologies at an event in Dallas, and that's actually kind of a steak and storage lunchtime deal. So if you're in Dallas, that's a good deal. We'll be talking at that event on.
If it's steak, it's a good deal. If it's rubber chicken,
No, this is steak. What we're going to be talking about is software-defined storage and taking sort of a critical view of it. So if you go to a vendor presentation, you'll hear about how great software-defined storage is. We'll talk about the good sides of software-defined storage, but we'll also talk about some of the bad sides, the stuff that people won't tell you. And so I encourage you, if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, again, you can look in the show notes for a link, and we can get you set up. And then the week after that, I am in New York and for the data protection workshop. So that's on the 2nd of April. And then, you know, that's probably enough for this podcast.
That's George Crump. I'm Charlie Hodges. Thanks for joining us as we look at news and insights from the storage industry on the Storage Podcast.
For more, go to StorageSwiss.com.